Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Road Show.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're so glad you're listening into this.
Yes, we are. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hey, we'd love for you to join the conversation. Just log on to facebook.com/themusicrowshow. Chat alongside with us.
Yeah.
And remember, you can always listen to past shows by clicking the podcast page on themusicrowshow.com. And there's some other ways to get a hold of us, right?
Yeah, you can hit us up on Twitter and Instagram. Speaking of podcasts, we put a bunch of new ones up today, so go check it out.
We did. Well, no wonder I'm so tired.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Good.
That's it.
Now, we need to get a Tumblr now, I heard.
Tumblr?
Are you doing
Tumblr
the Tumblr?
Tumblr account, yes.
See? Dylan's daughter does a Tumblr. That's what all the kids are doing these days.
Yeah, it hurts my back just to even think of that.
Our job is to find everything they do and make it as uncool as possible,
right, so that they'll move on to something
possible.
Else.
Right.
That's a goal.
So, Hino, who's this familiar face we have with us this hour?
Well, I'm glad you asked. We briefly visited with this guest a couple of years ago at the Frank Brown Songwriters Festival, but we were finally able to convince him. We twisted his arm a bit to come in and sit down for a proper chat. Joining us is hit songwriter and part-time stand-up comedian Dylan Altman. Dylan is a Berklee College of Music grad who's been writing here in Nashville for well over 18 years, and his songs have been recorded by artists like Jason Aldean and Trace Atkins and Will Hogue and Joe Nichols, Eli Young Band. His number one hits include Tim McGraw's Watch the Wind Blow By, Jake Owens' Barefoot Blue Jean Night, and we are just thrilled to death to finally be able to say, Dylan Altman, welcome to the Music Row Show.
All right. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Glad you're here.
Beautiful intro.
I think I'm going to cry.
Yeah. So I'm glad you're here. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
We see you around every now and then. We keep running into you. So
wanted posters.
Yeah, it's tough. People tend to follow me around a lot, but I've got my bodyguard behind
there
me.
There you go.
Yeah. My 12-year-old daughter. She chased them off.
So your mom was a French impressionist painter.
Yeah, like an abstract kind of
abstract
thing.
Your dad played jazz music and then was also a classical composer.
Yeah.
Does anybody in your family have a job? I mean, is that, I mean, how do you, and I'm just kind of curious, how do you go from Chinese lineage to Berklee to country songwriter? I mean, what?
Chinese?
No, classical.
Oh,
I said Chinese.
I probably did say Chinese. It's that drink wine did I say Chinese?
You did say Chinese.
You did.
I haven't told you, but I've arranged for a tour for you. You're going to be on tour in Beijing starting next
right
week.
Right after the show.
Yeah.
Right on, man.
Yeah.
Well, to answer your question, it's funny. My dad, he was also a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He was a music teacher, and he taught privately around New Jersey, and he also did he worked at a couple high schools, and he taught at a conservatory in Princeton called Westminster Choir College. So my mother, though, was a homemaker. She kind of raised me and my two brothers and my sister, and painted as well. But, yeah, he made a living. He didn't make a great living, but he did what he loved. And when he would do that music they loved, both of them were true artists. So it was a real honor to grow up in that house and to have two parents who encouraged me so much to chase this crazy dream of ours.
Yeah. Well, when you were last on, we briefly touched on your formal music education and how that plays into your writing of pop country songs.
Yeah.
Is that changed at all? How's that going? I mean, is that still something you would recommend somebody go do and get the formal education if they want to be a pop songwriter?
Not for this. I would think that, you know, I love that I have that in the, it's like I have that in my hip pocket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I can always, and there's sometimes when I'm writing a song in town, where I'll pull something like that will be relevant, like a certain chord change that'll come back from my memory. But, you know, when I went to Berklee College of Music, my dad wanted me to have something to fall back on in case I failed as a rock star. So he he made me be a film scorer, which I thought was kind of funny, like a film scoring major, that if I had failed as a rock star, I would just move out to L.A. and suddenly
Boom.
Become a film scorer. I had to compete with all those guys.
Right.
But so all my songwriting stuff I learned all on my own. I had no songwriting classes at Berklee. It was all through just listening to I think, you know, just great music my whole life. Yeah. Everything from the Beatles and, you know, Little Feet and the Allman Brothers and Frank Sinatra stuff. And, I mean, all just songs, just being covered in songs to the point where I just wrote a lot of bad songs to get to the point where I could write some really good ones, a couple great ones, and still some really bad ones.
Yeah. But, you know, the nice thing is after a while, do you recognize when they're bad?
You know, it's funny. What I've told people is that when you start doing it all the time, like 5 days a week, like mm-hmm. I'm doing it now at least like probably 46, 47 weeks a year, mm-hmm. 5 days a week. It's not that you really write. I mean, you do write stinkers. There's definitely some clunkers in there. But what happens is the majority are just kind of average.
Good.
You know, they're good where songs. It's kind of like they're good songs. They're not enough to crack through. But that's what keeps you going every day, is that you never know when you're going to write a Barefoot Blue Jean Night or take a little ride or one of those, or watch When Will It Buy, because those days were just like every other day I got up. Mm-hmm. You know, I got up to write a song, and some days you walk in feeling on top of a mountain, and you write an average song. And sometimes you write, like Barefoot Blue Jean Night was a 90-minute song. We wrote it in like 90 minutes, and we were done, and we knew it was great. We knew it was special. But, I mean, we didn't anticipate it being as big as it was.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's not so much the bad ones as much as you got to get used to the mediocre ones, which was tough for me because I'd started off as an artist. And when you're mm-hmm. writing as an artist, you write for yourself all the time. And I'm not saying everything you write is great, but it has to at least go through your filter.
Right.
So I wasn't writing 5 days a week when I was writing as an artist. So when you're at the point where you're no longer doing that, you have to accept that, okay, today I went and it was just okay, and I'm just going to get it again tomorrow.
Right.
And you just keep trying. And like I said, you can have like 20 days in a row of just average. It's like baseball.
Yeah.
It's such a numbers game. It's like, you know, the great baseball hitters fail more than they succeed. You
right.
fail 7 out of 10 times if you're a great hitter.
Right.
So
right.
the percentage as a writer is even worse.
More astronomical.
You know what I mean? And it's just, but that's all right. Because even, it's still fun. It's still always a great time.
Yeah.
We've had several publishers that have said, you know, it isn't that you're not writing good songs, but I have 12 guys here, or guys and girls, that are writing good songs every day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so when you're, as someone who doesn't have a pub deal, when you're trying to get in, mm-hmm. that's the thing, is you can't go in with
good
the songs that are as good as what you're hearing on the radio. You need to go in with something that kicks all of that,
yeah.
you know, that shakes the tree enough for them to pay attention to you.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, or you got to have something that maybe stands out.
Yeah.
You know, I think the fact that I'm different, like I'm from New Jersey. I didn't grow up listening to country music.
Right.
Not because I didn't like it. I just wasn't exposed to it. No
right.
one I grew up with listened to that. And now I do. Like mm-hmm, today
sure.
I was listening to my vinyl. I was listening to some George Jones and some of the old stuff, some of my favorite stuff. But I didn't grow up with that. So when I sit down in a room with someone, I think they know that I'm bringing in a lot of different influences that maybe they're not hearing.
Yeah.
And that's the reason I'm writing with them, is because they have influences that I don't have.
Right.
Because that's, you know, you come together and that's how you get.
Well, talk
magic.
About that. I mean, how do your New Jersey sensibilities factor into a song when you're writing with somebody who's from here, for example?
Well, I mean, what I always tell people is that I have always been a fan of pop music. And when I say pop music, I just mean popular music.
Okay.
And that's everything from Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett, like the standards, because mm-hmm. my dad, again, was a jazz musician. But I grew up really loving that music, and I still listen to it today.
Sure.
And when I was 5 years old, I would come home, 5, 6 years old, I'd come home from school, and I'd put on my parents' Beatles records on vinyl. Mm. So I was exposed to some of the best music of all time.
Right.
I had a sister who was 10 years older than me, so she had, you know, she listened to kind of everything from Little Feet to Bonnie Raitt to Springsteen. And of course, growing up in Jersey, there's so much Springsteen. I mean,
right.
I knew the Born to Run album inside out by the time I was 17. And then on top of that, I had an older brother, and every Sunday morning we would get up and we'd listen to Casey Kasem's American Top 40.
Mm-hmm.
And what was great is that back then, far more than now, there seemed to be that crossover stuff. So I was exposed to some country stuff. I mean, granted, it was more like Kenny Rogers or Ronnie Millsap.
Islands in the Stream.
Yeah, or Ronnie Millsap. And what was really cool for me, a kid from New Jersey, who when I was 11 years old was sitting around with my brother, and I loved that Ronnie Millsap tune, Oh, darling, there ain't no getting over me. And then you fast forward 23 years, and my publisher sets me up to write with Walt Aldridge, who wrote that song. And Walt's become a good friend of mine and a colleague. And it's just, that's still just, I hear that song, makes me smile every time. And I do shows with Walt, and when he goes into that, it's like, wow, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't realize I was listening to some country music and I was absorbing it. It was really just so, I bring in all the stuff I've ever done, which is heavy metal, you know, hard rock, blues, the Beatles, pop, Elvis Costello, everything. And I just bring it in and I have a very open mind and I love melodies and I love great lines. So, and I always try to bring in, and this is one of the most important things I tell any writer, is humility. That humility that you understand that you didn't invent the wheel. That even if you have to have confidence, but arrogance doesn't appeal to me. If I go into a room with someone who's arrogant, I usually shut down and want nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm very proud of my humility, actually. let's talk Jersey one. Let's a little bit longer because you come from a very supportive family, artistic family, so that's very cool. I'm just wondering, your friends, all the people you hung out with, do they get what you do? Are they like, really? He's in Nashville writing country songs. I mean, is there a?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. As you get older. I mean, when I was in high school, I had tons of friends.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, 25 years later, I have like four or five of those people I've kept in touch with.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them have known me since I was a kid playing music. I was always the guy playing guitar, and I was always singing songs. And they just knew that I was just doing music. So to them, it doesn't seem strange.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, when you listen to my songs that have been cut, they still sound like me. Even though there's going to be, you know, it's different instrumentation. It's not my voice, so it's someone usually with a more southern accent than I have, which I don't have at all.
What?
That's what I'm talking about. So, yeah, they're all very supportive. I mean, they all really get it, and they see that, you know, I'm doing, I think they just admire that I've stuck with it because, as you guys know, I mean, it is a tough racket, man.
Yeah.
It is a tough racket. It is. You have to be resilient. You got to take all the no's because we're all, even the best writers are going to get far more no's than they get yeses.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to have thick skin.
Man.
Wow.
So what's harder, making somebody laugh with a comedy routine or making somebody laugh or cry with a song? What's harder?
I would say, I don't know. It's going to sound arrogant, but it's not. They both have come easy to me in my life, which is not to mean I'm the funniest guy around. I am not.
Right.
Or the best writer around. But I've been good at both. And I feel like I've always found that when I did stand up, that's always the more challenging thing because you're on an island. You're there all alone.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like when I could go do a writer's night and have a cold or a chest thing where my voice is maybe 60%. But I know I can still pull it off because I could either capo my songs down and do a different arrangement. I could still bring heart and everything to it, and the crowd will get it. But, man, when I was doing stand-up, when you get up there, it's just you. And if you can't deliver, you know, you're finished. I mean, it was like, you know, I had to learn quick how to deal with that. So
what itch did that scratch that songwriting wasn't getting?
Oh, it wasn't that it wasn't. I've just always loved a lot of different stuff. Like, I love music, but I'm definitely not someone who would, you know, I have a lot of friends who are artists, musicians, whether they're country music artists or other pop or other genres who bleed that. Like, that's what they'll do the rest of their life. And that's all they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's never been me, and that'll never be me. Which isn't to say I don't love this. I mean, I love doing this. I wouldn't want to do anything else. But I also love comedy. I also love cooking. And I also love you know, traveling now and other different stuff. And there's all these different things that I have interest in. I've always grown up, and I think part of it is growing up with two parents who are artists, which was very fortunate for me, is that I have a very healthy amount of curiosity. You know, I feel like one of the most important things any of us as humans, and certainly as artists, can have is intellectual curiosity, where you're curious about stuff. And that's something I try to impart on my daughter and expose her to stuff that a lot of 12-year-olds wouldn't necessarily be exposed to. Like Isabella, my daughter, and she's probably shaking her head that I just mentioned her name on the air.
I felt the eyes roll.
I know, she's going to kill me later. But, you know, she's at 12 years old, she can pick out, she can tell the difference between Tony Bennett and Frank Sinatra. And she can recognize and recite some lines from, you know, Duck Soup by the Marx Brothers, which is one of the greatest comedies of all time. It's in black and white. I mean, most kids aren't exposed to that. And I exposed her to that because I was exposed to that.
Right.
And I think as a result of that, that made me hungry for more than just staying in a box, which is nothing wrong with it. Like, again, I have some friends who that's what they do, and they do it so well. And I just, it's, I've always wanted to do a little bit more. Like, I do a blues band on the side where I just, I'm the front man. And sing lead and play lead and just do all covers. And but it's all old blues stuff because I love doing it. It just it scratches another itch, like you said.
Well, we're going to talk more about that. We have to take a break. But really quickly, you just mentioned your daughter. You're a funny guy. You've done stand-up. Are you remotely funny to your kids?
She told me the other day that I'm the funniest dad she's ever had.
Really?
That she's ever had.
Well, you can't get better than that.
She told me I was very funny. She said she once told me, right?
Oh, she's denying it now. No. Oh, boy. Well, we're going to get you guys to have a chance to talk it out. We're going to be back with more of Dylan Altman here on The Music Row Show.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with hit songwriter Dylan Altman, and that, of course, is his number one for Tim McGraw called Watch the Wind Blow By.
Yeah.
That's a good tune.
Thank you.
That was your first number one?
It was the first song I ever had cut in town. It was like
one. And it was a number one.
It was number one. It was a really crazy.
You know how many people are hating you right now? When you say
you know,
like
it was pretty lucky, incredibly lucky that that happened. But I was at the time an artist in my own right trying to get a rock deal.
Okay.
So I didn't realize what a big deal it was at that time to have like a, because, you know, Tim McGraw single now is huge, but even then it was just enormous. So to have that was really special and just very lucky. I mean, you know, we wrote a really wonderful song. I love that song. Even today, I still play it a lot. But it was, it's amazing all the things that have to happen because you're competing against 13 or 14 other songs, which are all potential singles.
Yeah. Right.
So it's like a lottery ticket, you know?
The reason I asked you to hold on a minute, because I wanted to hear the second line in that song.
I know where you're going.
Barefootin' seems to be a theme. I don't know if you've noticed this. That's the line in
That's
Watch
funny.
The Wind Go By, Barefoot, Blue Jean Night. Take a Little Ride talks about pretty little pink toes. Do you work foot fetish into all the songs? Is that your hits? Have we just found the hit
secret?
Hey, listen, guys. This is like, I didn't know we were going to delve into this personal stuff, but if we're going to do it, I mean, I figured it'd be an after midnight show we talk about that stuff.
We brought it.
Well, I got to be honest.
There's foot stuff
there
in all three of those songs.
And I'll be honest with you. All three of those songs, all three of those lines, I wasn't responsible for any one of those. So it was very interesting. When we wrote Watch Wind Blow By, Anders Osborne, who I wrote that with, is a wonderful artist from New Orleans, singer-songwriter. That day we had just, that was the first day we ever wrote. And, he's funny, man. He lives in New Orleans, but he's originally from Sweden. and he's got a funny like New Orleans kind of accent. So we were together, and he goes, "Man, I got an idea, kind of like a Bam Marson idea." And he started playing that, and he had like the first two lines. He had, but he had "Creek Goes Crippling By," and McGraw changed it to "Rippling," which I didn't have either feeling it before. I kind of found "Crippling" a little awkward, but I loved it when he said it. "Creek Goes Crippling By," and then he said, "Been barefooting all day with my baby." And I even asked him. I said, "What do you mean? But what's that barefoot?" And he goes, "Man, just hanging out, barefooting. You know, I'm walking along a creek." So that was that. And then Barefoot Blue Jean Night, I think Eric had that title when we wrote that. I told him, I don't know if you want me to tell you a story about that song, but he had the barefoot part of that. And then Pretty Pink Toes on the Dash was probably Rodney. I mean, Rodney Clausen. Once, you know, I had that riff and the I'm just hitting on this shit. And once you throw stuff like that at Rodney, he's so, he was the BMI Songwriter of the Year last year.
Right.
Just a monster talent, and he is so good with that stuff, with just those inner rhymes and just flowing, that, you know, he just flew that. It just kind of spit it out, and it was just perfect.
So that's just sheer coincidence that your three number ones have bare feet in all three of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking that's kind of weird, man. A sandals endorsement deal. And it somewhere
should be,
right?
It should be capitalizing on this stuff. Yeah.
After the show, we're going to write Toe Jam Sunday Morning.
Nice. All right.
Yeah. Something tells me I won't sell as good.
Well, hey, we'd love to hear you play some. What you feel like playing for us?
Well, I know. I think you had said you liked that one that my buddy Eric Pasley and I wrote.
Yeah, it's a good
Shane
one.
Shane McAnally on Eric's new record called Countryside of Heaven.
Let's do it.
All right. On the countryside of heaven, you walk along the emerald brooks, where the fish are always biting. You don't even need a hook, no. The horses run across the amber. There ain't no fences way up there. You can brush the stars on the midway of St. Peter's County Fair. Whoa, an angel plays a southern hymn on a silver mandolin, shining in the Delta sun. Prayers dance across the prairie, nothing there is ordinary, always with the ones you love, on the countryside of heaven. Oh, oh, oh. The countryside of heaven. Oh, oh, oh. Kids are jumping off the back porch to a cloud up in the sky. The water turns into sweet tea on the bayou by and by. Whoa, whoa, an angel plays a southern hymn on a silver mandolin, shining in the Delta sun. Prayers dance across the prairie, nothing there is ordinary, always with the ones you love, on the countryside of heaven. Whoa, whoa, the countryside of heaven. I wanna go to the countryside of heaven. Oh, countryside of heaven, yeah. On the countryside of heaven, someday
is where I'll be, singing harmony with Jesus. When you get there, look for me on the countryside of heaven. An angel plays a southern hymn on a silver mandolin, shining in the Delta sun. Prayers dance across the prairie, nothing there is ordinary. Always with the ones you love on the countryside of heaven. Whoa, whoa. On the countryside of heaven. Yeah, I wanna go to the countryside of heaven. Heaven, 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 the countryside of heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Woo! Now, you know, Eric Pasley actually put that on his.
Yeah, it's on his current record. It's on his new album. Record, yeah.
Now tell me what that song's called again.
No, that's why you said
funny.
That. We
smart.
That's Eric. No. That's a very good point, because every time I do that in a round, one of my co-writers inevitably will say the same thing. What's the title of that song? And I always say, man, that's called Hammering Home a Hook.
Yeah. That you did. Now, you wrote Barefoot Blue Jean Night with Eric as well,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
How'd you guys get hooked up together and start writing together?
Well, it's an interesting story, because I used to write for a company called Cal 4 Entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was there for 13 years. Wonderful experience. Great people over there. And about 7 years ago, Eric was the intern. He had just gotten out of MTSU. Ah. And I didn't know him that well. He was a sweet kid, but he was just kind of this awkward guy. He's very 6'4". Tall redhead, as he calls himself, a giant leprechaun, you know. Okay. And one day, the guy in the tape room, this is dating it, this 7 years ago, we still actually called it a tape room. There was a guy in the tape room who looked at me one day and said, man, you should write with Eric one day. And I was like, you mean that strange, tall, redheaded guy is always around? And he goes, yeah. He goes, he's really good. So I was like, okay. So we got together, and we just wrote a great song that first day and really hit it off. And another way we connected was that I had just about a year and a half, 2 years before, had lost my little brother to type 1 diabetes. And he was my best friend in the world. We were as close as could be. And still carry around a broken heart for that to this day. But Eric, I didn't find out to that day, has type 1 diabetes. Wow. And I'm not the most religious person or spiritual, but I have a spiritual side, and I felt like that was a reason why we had met, because Eric's about 13 years younger than me, so he's kind of like a little brother, or should I say a tall little brother, and a taller little brother. So we just kind of hit it off, man, and from that point on, we started writing songs every week.
Wow.
And even though he was just the intern, I knew they were interested in signing him over there, but, I mean, no one knew where it was going, but I just had a feeling that, I had a feeling he was going to really succeed. I just thought he had natural gifts that were just so obvious to me at that point. And I just loved him. He was just a sweetheart of a guy. He became, like I said, like my little brother. So to this day, he's one of my best friends, and we're very close. And it's been tough the last year because he's been so busy promoting Friday Night, which went number one, his first single, and now his new one, that we haven't written on a Wednesday in almost 6 to 8 months. So we got to kind of now do it on the road, which is fun. I still get to see him a little bit, but... But, yeah, he's one of my best friends. So we just kind of became close because I just got together and write with him and saw how great he was. And that's
nice.
I love stories like that. I love that in this town you can go from intern to number one hit recording artist and songwriter. I mean, that's just cool.
Well, talk about songwriting as therapy, because you were just kind of touching on that. How important is opening up and letting stuff out when you're writing and writing about what you know?
Man, you know, I mean, obviously, we're all writers, so you have to write, you know, most often for the market. You're trying to write, like, all right, who's looking today or instead? Even though I'm not one of those guys who does that. But when I went through tough times, whether it was losing my brother or losing my mother or going through a divorce, I mean, it's the greatest therapy there is. Because if I would come in, a lot of times during those times, my ideas were based off that. And, you know, I'm fortunate that a lot of the people I write with regularly are some of my closest friends. So, you know, we were able to talk about that stuff and then write some songs. I mean, I wrote some wonderful songs during those times. And, yeah, I mean, I thank God for that, because it's like, had I not had that, you wonder what, how, you know, because there's so much you have to express. There's so much you have to get out, that if I wasn't a creative person, I could understand how that would be bottled up. Because, I mean, even still, you bottle stuff up.
Sure.
But to be able to express that on a daily basis was a real gift.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. Melissa, I want to actually want to touch on that when we come back about writing that kind of personal stuff. We're here with hit songwriter Dylan Altman. You're listening to The Music Row Show. We'll be back in just a sec.
How's everybody doing tonight? All right. A full moon shining bright. Edge of the water, we were feeling all right. Back now on a country road. The girls are always hot and the beer is ice cold.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That, of course, is Jake Owen doing a live version of Barefoot Blue Jean Night. We're here with one of the songwriters responsible for that tune, hit songwriter Dylan Altman.
I was watching that video. And, you know, it's all the girls in their bathing suits and the guys with their washboard abs.
Sure.
Have you noticed that in most of these videos, they never think to place the songwriter in these? I'd love to see. I'd love it to where they could always pick out. And there's
the songwriter.
The pasty guy. You know.
The guy without the washboard
abs. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, there he is.
With the one pack.
You know. Yeah. There we go. Right there.
I just think that might be something. So we were talking about writing is therapy, and I'm just curious, and maybe this doesn't happen because you're writing with people that you're really close to, but what happens when you're in a dark place and you walk into a writing room and the co-writer says, hey, I just heard from my publisher, Florida Georgia Line is looking for one more party anthem. What you got? Let's do something today.
You do it. It's a job. That's right. It's like you realize it's a job. You gotta, and I did that a lot, man. There were some really dark days in the last 7-8 years where, I would just put my 2 feet to the floor. I'd like wake up in the morning. I've been lucky in that I'm one of those people who can sleep like through anything. So I could be going through a crisis, and right before I close my eyes at night, I'll be like, man, this is really awful. I'll be like, well, you know what? I'll deal with it tomorrow. And then when my eyes open, I realize I'm dealing with it. And the first thing I was doing in those days was say, all right, got to get up. Got a little girl. You got a job. You got to make it work. So I would put my 2 feet to the floor, and I'd show up. And some days it would be tough. I'm not going to kid you. It was some days really tough to do it. But that was also therapy. I mean, not only just expressing my sad feelings, but being able to walk into a room and do something happy was able to lift me
kinda
up.
Kind of lift you up.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was I feel so lucky to have a job like this, to be able to show up with friends I love and so many talented people. And when I'm happy or sad, be able to express it. Yeah. Those feelings.
Now, when you're writing from a personal place, where's that line? I mean, can you get too personal? I mean, is it possible to be too personal in pursuit of a good song?
I not for me. Okay. I mean, I'm not afraid to put it out there. And again, it always goes back to having two parents who are artists. And it was something I learned from both of them. Both of them were so good at when I grew up. Because when I was growing up in the 80s, you know, my little brother, who passed away 10 years ago from diabetes, he had cancer when he was younger, too.
Oh, man.
And my older brother had a bout of epilepsy. So there was a lot of hard times for my family. And but there was also a lot of happy times. And what would happen is the most valuable lesson I learned just as an artist, as a creative person, was that anything good or bad that would happen to our family would end up on my mom's canvas as a painter or on my dad's music. And so that was one of the things I learned, was that to be able to channel that pain or joy or anything into the creative process. So a real wonderful thing.
Wow. Awesome. We just have a couple minutes and then we're going to take one more break and get another song out of him when we come
absolutely.
Back. But you've said something a couple times and it I think it really bears digging into for a minute. And that's talk about the fact that there's songwriting, there's you know, letting it all out, but then there's also being a commercial songwriter. And I love the fact that you look at this is what I am. I'm trying to write commercial songs. And I think a lot of people moan about that these days, but there's nothing wrong with being a commercial songwriter. I mean, talk about that.
Oh, no. I mean, I moan about it myself sometimes. I mean, really? You know, you turn on the radio, and I sure as hell don't love everything I hear in the radio. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys are the same way. And there's times I'll hear a song, sometimes written by one of my dearest friends that I think's a piece of, you know what?
Art. But
you know what? It's a job. And the reality of it all today, I mean, it's always been that way, but now more than ever, is you have to get singles. You have to write singles. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not, I don't feel that is a big compromise, though, because as I said earlier, I didn't grow up listening to obscure music. I've always listened to popular music.
Right.
Even the guys who are more arty, like Bruce Springsteen or Neil Young or Bob Dylan, they've sold millions and millions of records. Those are popular music guys.
Right.
They write great melodies. They have hooks all over those songs. So I try to bring that in to every time I write a song. Now, I can write music and lyrics, but I think my strength is either coming up with a hook or recognizing a hook. So if I'm in a room with a guy or a woman, a male, or whoever I'm writing with that day, and they have an idea, and they come in, and it's clearly, like, really hooky and stuff, well, I'm like, and I had something myself, but that's better.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I want to write. I want to write the one that's better because that excites me. I'm like, man, I want to write that. That sounds great.
Right.
Again, like I said, one of the most important things I've learned as a writer is humility. You go into a room and we're all equal, and whoever had, because the day I wrote with Eric, the first day, I was a supposed hit songwriter at the time with Watch the Wind Blow By, and he was just the intern. But the moment he opened his mouth and started singing his idea, it was so great that's all that mattered at that moment. I didn't care as long as it was good. So, and I've learned that. I mean, I've gone in rooms with recording artists who've sold millions of records and they can't write their ways out of a paper bag.
Mm-hmm.
And some people who haven't had deals yet who are great. I mean, it's just, you know, it's all about going in and recognizing that, like I said, none of us invented the wheel. We all can learn from someone else. And just try and walk out with a really good song. And I believe that stuff will fall in the line. I mean, because, again, I listen to commercial music, so it's going to be commercial.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always try to write a great song.
Excellent. So. Well, listen, we're going to take one more break, but we're going to be back with hit songwriter Dylan Altman here on The Music Row Show. Oh yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. You already know this, but that's Take a Little Ride, Jason Aldean. Co-written by our guest this hour, Dylan Altman. That's a great tune. That's one of those you just turn up when you're driving down the road. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I really liked it when I first heard it. I still do.
I'm curious if we can talk just for a second about that, because you said you came in with that.
Yeah.
And that lick, to me, that melody is the hook in my mind. You know, that sometimes the melody is it. So talk about coming in with something like that. And then that song actually got turned down for Aldean CD before it got picked up for one, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what's interesting about that is when we wrote that, because, again, I grew up listening to rock music.
Sure.
So that day I was noodling with my guitar. I knew I was writing with Rodney and Jim McCormick, two of my best buddies, And I was, for whatever reason, I was messing around with a thing that reminded me of Pearl Jam's Alive. Mm-hmm. And you could, like, interchange those two songs. Like, you know, I'm still alive. I'm just ready to ride this Chevy to ride this. So it's kind of the same thing.
Wow.
You know what I mean? It's the same chord change. But, yeah, what was the other question you said about the...
The riff.
Yeah, you know, we just kind of, I was singing that melody, and I had I didn't say ride the Chevy yet, I just had all that melody for the chorus, and, you know, we just kind of stumbled upon that title, And then we just kind of started rolling. And it's just what happened with Aldean is Rodney has a great relationship with those guys because Rodney's had several big Aldean cuts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what happened is they loved it for the album with, what's the I forget, it was a party song. I forget what it was called.
Oh, My Kind of Party.
My Kind of Party.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, the way these records are structured, these albums are structured, is there's certain slots. And I think they had that kind of slot covered with My Kind of Party and other kind of, there was a couple other songs. But what's great because of Rodney, I think, is that they kind of kept that in their hip pocket. And when it came around again, it was repitched probably by either my company or Rodney's or Rodney directly. And they remembered it and they still loved it, which was rare. It's really nice that it had a shelf life for them. And it was their first single. And it came out the gate and, you know, debuted at like number 18 on the charts and was number one within
10 weeks,
and was a 3 week number one, which is rare these days. So
nice,
it was a really, really nice thing.
Well, we're running out of time, so we'd love to have another song from it if you feel like playing one for us.
Yes, this is one I wrote with my good buddy Will Hogue.
Oh, nice,
great Nashville artist, singer songwriter, awesome. One of my oldest friends in town. We've been friends about 16-18 years now. And touching on what you were mentioning before, Scott, about, you know, my parents being artists and stuff. It's, you know, this is a song that, Take a Little Ride, I love that song. But we wrote that, and that's a commercial song.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one day Will had this title, and the title was Another Song Nobody Will Hear. Mm. And as a commercial artist, a commercial writer, you're at first thinking, well, that doesn't sound like the type of song we need to be writing. But again, I've always been creative, and my parents were artists. And like I told you guys, my parents, whatever happened to my family, good or bad, made it onto her canvas and his music. So I understood what he meant. And I understood, and I'm sure you guys do as writers too, that some days you want to write something that isn't a huge, happy, up-tempo song. And you want to write something not even because you want to, but because you have to. You gotta get it off your chest. So this is a song for that, for anyone who's ever wanted to write a song for the sake of it, for the sake of art's sake, which, again, is not to knock creative commercial music. It's just that this is for that other side of our brain where sometimes you got to do it. So this is another song nobody will hear. And in one of the great moments of musical irony, Will released his song in Texas last year with Wade Bowen and went number one.
So good.
The joke was on us on that one. I wake up in the darkness, the clock says 3 a.m. There's a war raging inside me, so I reach for my old friend, the one who's always been there to make the pain all disappear. I write another song nobody will hear. This damn guitar knows all my secrets, all my broken dreams, all the joy and all the laughter that I have ever seen. The one who stood beside me, we've been together all these years. Let's write another song nobody will hear. Another song about redemption, another song of broken trust, another song about those golden rings that turn to rust. I got pages full of memories, I can see them all so clear. As I write another song nobody will hear. I came down here to Nashville with a million tales to tell. The first thing that I found out is that the truth don't always sell. They want songs about the back roads and tractors, trucks, and beers. While I write another song nobody will hear. Another song like George and Tammy, another song like Bill Monroe, another song you probably won't hear on the radio. Yeah, I got pages full of memories, I can see them all so clear. As I write another song,
another song nobody will hear. Oh yeah, I write another song nobody will hear. Yeah.
Nice. Now, you actually rewrite a lot with Will Hogue, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. How'd you guys get hooked up?
We were both in the mid-90s just in rock bands. We were just kind of in local bands in town. He's a local boy. He grew up in Franklin.
Franklin, yeah.
And we're a year apart, so we're kind of, you know, around the same age, have the same interest in music. We're very similar, sense of humor, politics, everything, and movies, everything. So we just kind of hit it off, and we used to open for each other's bands, and I don't want to say we had a falling out, but he got really on the road all for like 300 dates a year practically. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And that was right when I had Isabella. So, you know, I was kind of a dad writing songs at home. And then he had that really bad accident about 4 or 5 years ago, which almost killed him. And I saw him one day afterwards in the old Davis Kid bookseller. Which is the one there. And it was like, you know, he's like a brother. So I saw him get up. He got up from the chair, and he still had his cane. And it was one of those moments where it just immediately hit my heart. I was like, wow, this is someone who I love, who I was like a brother to. And I saw that, and we just reconnected. And then he wrote that song with Eric that Eli Young Band did, Even If It Breaks Your Heart. And then he and I just started writing again and reconnecting. And, you know, I have 5 songs on his current album and had 3 in the last one. And we write 2-3 times a month. And we got a new cut with Gloriana, and we got some other stuff on hold. And he's just one of my dearest friends in the world. Just a great talent and monster talent. I mean, if you guys have ever seen him live or have or anyone out there listening in Radio Land, check him out, because he's worth checking out.
He's really good. Yeah,
he's been on here. He's a great guest. I've seen him at the opera too. He's tremendous. And this has been a tremendous hour. Thank you.
Thank you,
much.
Guys. It just flew by. So that just goes to show what a good time I was having.
Sweet.
Even with my kid making faces at me behind me.
I got to ask you, have you heard the lullaby version of Take a Little Ride?
No, is there really a lullaby?
It really is a lullaby. I'll have to play it for you after the show.
That's funny.
There's a CD of Nashville lullaby songs.
Oh, really?
And that's
love
one
to
of
hear
them.
That. Wow. All right,
cool.
Wow.
Nice. Look at you. Look how happy you
are.
Yeah,
that makes me happy.
Wow. Hey, guys, it's been a great show. Stick around. Come see us next week on the Music Row Show right here. Same time, same place.
Yeah, if you can find our website at themusicrowshow.com, we'll see you next week. In the meantime, go write something.